Welcome to episode 111 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. And today we're going to be doing the second round table, and it's taken a little bit longer than I'd hoped to get around to doing another, but hopefully we'll make up for that with a great episode for you today. And I'm really pleased to say that after a tiny bit of a false start last time, from Washington State in the US, we have Landon Michelson. Welcome, Landon.
Greetings. Thank you.
And also from Toronto, Canada, we have Holly Sisson. Welcome, Holly.
Hello.
And from Idaho in the USA, we have Phil Peck. Hi, Phil.
Hey, everybody.
So it's really great to have you all on the podcast. I've been, you know, looking forward to this for the last few weeks while we've been setting it up. So I'm just going to quickly mention what we're going to talk about today, and then we'll get right into it. So Landon is going to be talking about long exposures, ND, and painting with time. And Holly is going to be talking about her new business and shooting families, children, and couples with the challenges that come with that as well. And Phil is going to talk about using Lightroom to process his work quickly. And I'm going to then also be just talking about not letting the excitement of the location or the subject affect your image editing. And that is, you know, not sort of editing each image individually in Photoshop, but rather, going through and actually, you know, culling your images and then leaving in what's going to stay and taking out what's not. So let's get right into it. Okay, so let's get started with Landon.
Okay. I was going to bring up a topic that's been exciting me lately, and it's, you know, I've seen it in images for years, and in the old days of film, we used to do long exposures, not think much of it. You stick the camera on the tripod, you put it on bulb, and you close the shutter, and you let it sit and cook for 2 hours and then come back, you know, and do another one, and then the night's over, and you send your film off finally, and you get something back, and you're either delighted or depressed. But with the advances of, you know, digital cameras, instant feedback, and instant gratification and snapping thousands of photos, it seems like the art of long exposures is being done by fewer and fewer people. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I've looked at doing myself, and wanted to step into it and look at how to do it, what to do, what not to do. And so I just had a few things to share on that. I'm not going to get into the technical side of those types of things this evening. I will be providing a document that'll be a follow-up to this that you can look through that'll talk about more of the technical stuff. I wanted to talk tonight more about the art and the approach to long exposures, going beyond the night and going beyond 30 seconds. Because we've all seen, you know, star trail exposures, car headlights, tail light streaming along flowing highways of lights. Fireworks are often long exposures as well. Night shots of spinning amusement park rides, you know, long exposures of mountain lakes and ocean shorelines at night. Long exposures at night are pretty easy because the light's so low. You don't need any special equipment. You just need a camera and a cable release and your point to focus at and let it go. But what about venturing out in daylight and getting creative with long exposures in daylight? That's where I've been exploring. So that's what the topic of this is.
Great.
So I've been intrigued by long exposures in daylight, whether it be dusk, dawn, sunrise, sunset, or even the middle of the day. And smaller apertures are not going to get you there. All you're going to do is get, compromised images. Trying to get to f/32 is not going to get you to a long exposure in daylight. So what you need is heavy neutral density filters to get the light values down to where you need them to get some long exposures with whatever scene you want to capture, whether it's moving clouds, moving water, moving people, moving subjects, whatever it is. And that's really the topic tonight, is to talk about just some of the high points of looking creatively at long exposures in other than nighttime situations. So the first image that I was going to point to tonight, and we're only going to talk about two, was actually the first image that I did with a neutral density 400 filter, and it's made by Hoya, and it basically stops the light down to 8 2/3 from the amount of light entering the camera in one
filter. Landon, sorry, you broke up slightly there. How many and two-thirds?
8 2/3. It's practically 9 stops, but technically it's 8 2/3. So,
okay.
But an ND400 blocks enough light to start getting you towards, minutes of exposure in daylight. It's not quite enough to get you there all the time. You do need a couple more stops or even twice as many stops at some times. But the first image that I shot was that I point here in the notes and talk about.
Yeah. I probably should just jump in and say that if the listeners are listening to the Enhanced podcast in iTunes, then this image will be viewed. You'll be able to see this right now or on your iPod or whatever. If not, you'll have to go to the show notes and grab the link.
Right. So the first image was taken in the morning. It was a sunrise shot, and it's blue. That was pretty much the color of the morning. I didn't get a good sunrise that morning. But what excited me about it was just locking the exposure down and letting the clouds and the water pass in front of me on the Columbia River and capture, in this case, 4 minutes of light and scenery passing by. And the nice thing to me about finding this new, or adjusted workflow of slowing down and taking long exposures is it forces you to slow down. It forces you to think more. It forces you to plan a little more. You can't go out there and take a 4 minute exposure and the light's gone, and then you look at it and go, oh, well, I didn't plan that one very well. So it's kind of nice to slow down and think more and plan more and get more keepers to some degree than just firing away at a scene and seeing what you get. So that's that first image is called Calm Blue Morning, and it's not my favorite, but it was the first one that that I got in the camera that excited me to keep going. And then the second image, it was also a morning shot a few minutes earlier than the other one, and it's titled Passing Time. And as another example, it's a 2 minute exposure. Again, it's water and rocks. In this case, it's a black and white that's been toned slightly blue. And the feedback on this one's been pretty good. And I've enjoyed taking these. And these are just two that are a little less processed than some of my other landscape workflow. So that's why I chose these two. And this image is, just shows again the water moving by, the clouds moving. And it gives a little bit of touch of surreal to the scene. And something that I've kind of gravitated to and liking lately. So that's my.
Sorry for jumping in. I'm just wanted to quickly say I'm looking at the shots. You've sent me them to include them in the audio, and I'm just they're beautiful shots. I love the detail in the rocks and everything, and then the really sort of silky water and skies and that. It's great work.
Great, thanks. I wasn't sharing these for. Just to get compliments on them. I like feedback too, because there's people out there that have done this for years, and I'm still learning myself, but it is exciting, so I wanted to share it. So in a nutshell, you can't get there by, cramming your aperture all the way down, and you can't get there by using an ND1, 2, or 3 that you might have in your camera bag. To get there during daylight hours, you really need to get some heavy ND filters, probably even more than one. And you can combine them with another ND filter. You can combine them with a polarizer. Of course, the more you stack and the wider angle you have, the more vignetting you're going to have to worry about. But that's a workflow issue. But that's basically what I wanted to talk about. And if there's any, simple questions or whatnot regarding that.
Does anybody have anything to ask? I've got a couple of things I was thinking.
Like, I had a couple questions. I guess I've seen, these, and you're saying they're less processed than your other ones. I was curious on how much more processing you did have to get to some of your other shots that I've seen of yours, the autumn leaves, and because I just, every long exposure I've ever done seems, less sharp, and it takes a lot more effort to get a good-looking image at the end of the day.
Okay, well, that's a pretty easy answer. The reason why I chose these two is because they have fewer exposures that I use to create them. Most of the other landscape work that I didn't link to, but it's in the, they're several of them in the Martin Bailey galleries that you can see. Those were ones that were typically shot with more than one exposure, typically maybe three, even five exposures, just to make sure I've got all of the light values that were in the scene captured on the histogram, so that when I come back and post, I can merge those together and have total control over highlights in the sunrise, highlights in the clouds, how much exposure I want to bring into the foreground and the middle ground. So you have total control over that. So there is a little bit of hybrid processing going on in most of those landscapes, but that's kind of where my workflow is taking me to get total control over the light values in the scene. So that's why I kind of chose these two, because they're less processed. They're pretty much one exposure with a tweak.
Yeah, because I actually don't own Photoshop, and so all of my exposure are all single. You know, all my images are single exposures. So, you know, seeing a lot of these that are, you know, stacked exposures, you know, I was curious, and, you know, are they, do you have to do that to get these kind of effects, or is a single exposure work?
Well, you don't have to, but here's my issue. If you go get a graduated neutral density filter set, you know, you've hard and soft, you've got one, two, three stop versions, you can stack them together and you can align them however you want them. The problem for me is a lot of the scenery that I end up shooting is undulating, and I don't like where the graduated ND filter darkens parts of the scene that I don't want darkened. And plus, it's one more thing to keep clean. It's one more thing to keep dropping in the river while you're shooting. It's one more thing to pack. And it, for me, it just becomes a workflow instead of a workflow. So for me personally, I prefer the exposure bracketing and merging in post than the graduated neutral density. Now that I've said that, I have found in my workflow where the graduated neutral density does help with long exposures, because if you've got an 8-minute exposure and you want to nail the exposure the first time, you might need to use a neutral density to knock part of the scene down, because you don't have a chance to do another exposure because the light will be gone or something else in the scene has changed. So there is a case where they're still usable. But for me, I generally don't use them.
Fair enough.
Okay. So that actually was the majority of what I wanted to ask. So,
sorry about that.
No, not at all. I guess, Holly, did you have anything that you were...
I wondered, when you go to take the picture, do you have an idea in your mind how you think it's going to turn out, and does it usually turn out that way?
Yes and no. There's always happy accidents, but the more of these that I shoot, the more I start to look at the scene and start to figure out what it is in the scene that I will get. And the wonderful thing about painting with time is you're using the fourth dimension. You know, we have three dimensions that we see in front of us, but the fourth dimension is passing time. So it forces you to not only look at length, width, and height, but you start looking at the scene in time and what's going to happen, you know, during that time exposure. The one interesting thing I found is this Columbia River that flows right by my doorstep, basically, that I launch down to every time that the light's good, capture some scenery, is the river level keeps rising and lowering. So I get my favorite rocks all lined up. I do an exposure, and I go to set up the next one, and they're either covered or they've changed. So it's interesting. It really changes the dynamics of the scene. So you do have to think in the fourth dimension and plan a little bit for what's going to happen with the light. And one tip I have is I usually capture the longer exposure that I need with the light that's best, because you can't get a 4-minute exposure of bad light, but you can get a 30-second exposure of decent light and merge them together. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So I start with the longest exposure first and nail that one. And then if I need others, then I go capture them. But sometimes you can get the scene in one capture, but sometimes you can't.
Right. And can you usually determine that by looking at your histogram, that you've caught it the way you need it, or?
Yes, I always look at the RGB histogram, and I look at the channels, and I figure out how many stops under or over I need to go in another exposure to make sure that when I walk away from the scene that I have every light value from the deepest shadows to the brightest highlights captured, so that in post I can merge those together any way I wish.
Okay.
That's all pretty cool. So I actually did some long exposure work myself, It was about a year or so ago. I was working on some shots looking out over the ocean, with this like a Shinto gate there, where, and I just sort of let the ocean go into like a silky sort of mass. And I ended up, I found out later that I'd not got the noise reduction, auto noise reduction turned on my 5D. But when I looked at the images, I did get a lot of sort of green and blue sort of red, green and blue pixels just sort of there. And I was wondering, you know, if there was anything that you do for that yourself, Landon.
Well, the first thing would be to turn long exposure noise reduction on if you're going to be playing around with long exposures. Mm-hmm. The people that do it a lot can turn that setting off and do it other ways, and that'll be in the more detailed notes. But it's not a bad idea to turn it on and try it. You might want to make sure your camera buffer doesn't drop down in value. I know some manufacturers do that when you do that. So check that if that's an issue for you. But a lot of times you have custom banks. You can set that to a preset in one bank and off in another. So that's a benefit too. But definitely what you're looking at is reducing thermal image noise from your sensor heating up. And the colder it is, the less likely that will be an issue. But the warmer it is, or the warmer the sensor gets, the more chance you have of noise. So what that dark frame subtraction process does is unfogs that pixel mass that has nothing to do with ISO noise. It's just your sensor heating up, and the dark frame will take the exact same length of exposure time and then merge those two together and cancel each other out.
Okay, I see. So I have actually turned it back on again now, but I reckon I turned it off when I got the camera thinking I wouldn't need it. But that's great. I mean, I'm going to definitely keep a lot of this stuff in mind. I'm hoping to do some more long exposures as well, so it's all sort of really helping me out too. And I'm sure it will for most of the listeners. So does anybody
else? There's one gotcha.
What's that?
You turn long exposure noise reduction on and you do an 8-minute exposure,
yeah,
you're not going to see your image. You're not going to see your image for 16 minutes.
Right, I realize that. It's doing that whole what is it? What do you call it? The negative frame.
Dark frame subtraction.
Yeah,
the dark frame subtraction.
Camera, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So, well, that's good. I'll take a look at your document as well and see what we, you know, see if I can come up with something myself. And I'm looking forward to getting into this a little bit more. It's, like I say, it's not something that I've done a lot of until now. So does anybody have any other questions for Landon? Okay, if not, so let's move on to Holly's topic.
Okay. So I thought I would speak about starting my business, which I started this July. I actually got my first DSLR in August 2006 with the intention of hopefully starting a business, though at that point I'd never shot with an SLR. I'd only shot with a point and shoot, so I really couldn't be sure if it would work out. I had a friend who saw my pictures and had told me, I guess over the course of the winter, that she wanted me to shoot the family, and so I knew I had that. And I was at my son's t-ball game one night with my big 70-200 Canon lens, and somebody asked if I was a professional photographer and wanted to have me come and do family pictures as well. And I thought, well, I guess this is a sign that maybe I should get up and running. And actually, a point to people who are thinking about doing this, I think getting a site up with prices is a great way. I know a lot of people have issues with their friends and family want them to come and take pictures. Well, maybe not family, because maybe you would do that anyway, but friends. And now if people are interested and ask how much or what my prices are, I can just direct them to my site, and I don't have to get into what might be an awkward conversation. They can decide on their own when they see my prices whether they want to proceed or not, and that seems to work out well. It's when you first start up, there's so much that you have to do. I mean, you have to decide on what you're going to shoot, if you're going to specialize. I know there are some people that only shoot children, or they specialize in newborns. I'm doing family, couples, maternity, newborns, anything. I didn't feel, I know a lot of people that I've spoken to on Flickr, or interacted with on Flickr, they'll spend a year doing portfolio building sessions And fortunately, I have two children, so I felt that, and between my children and their friends, I felt that I'd done enough, at least child photography, that I didn't feel that I needed to do that, though I have done a few portfolio building sessions with for maternity and newborn, because I didn't have any experience doing that. And also I had a friend of mine and his wife help me out doing a couple shoot. So I think, you know, that's a good idea. I think it helps that I have children. And I also think that, and I think, you know, Landon can pop in here at the end and give his opinion, that it's a great career for a woman, and especially a mother, shooting children, because I think until you have children, unless you've been around a lot of children, it's hard to, I can relate to them easily, having been a mother and gone through, had that direct interaction with children. It's, I can relate to the mother, and I think that children tend to be more comfortable with women because they're usually with women more. They're female teachers at the younger age, and certainly when I was shooting the maternity, I could speak about being pregnant, and we could relate in that way. And when I went to do the newborn, she wasn't uncomfortable nursing in front of me, and I got some beautiful pictures of her nursing. So I think it's a great possible career for any woman out there who might be thinking about doing it. It's flexible, so you can schedule your sessions depending on what your other family obligations are. But there is a lot to do when you first start up a business. You've got to decide your name. You've got to get your website up. I strongly suggest getting a blog up as well. One of the things that I do, and I know a lot of other family photographers do, is with their blogs, they do sneak peeks of the session. So they'll come home and they'll pick a few favorites from the session and get them up on their blog. And that helps drive traffic to your blog and hopefully to your website as well, from the client looking at the sneak peek and hopefully forwarding the link to their friends and hopefully it mushrooms like that. I think kind of trying to define your style, and that may be an evolving thing. When I first started, I should say I use Lightroom primarily for all my processing. I do take some pictures into Photoshop and take them further if I do a textured shot. Or apply an edge effect or what have you. But Lightroom is fabulous, and I know that Phil's going to speak more about Lightroom. But I found at the beginning I was still trying to figure out my style, and I would spend way too much time in Lightroom kind of looking at each picture and going through all the different presets and changing the settings. And now I've kind of refined my style. I do high contrast black and white, and I do kind of a pop the color in the color images if that works, and that has cut down my processing or post-processing time dramatically. Let's see, well, so getting the word out that you're doing this, you know, having my children in, my son's in grade 2 and my daughter's in grade 6, I mean, you can hand out your business card to all the parents at the school, so that's one way to kind of get the word out. The other thing I do, just walking around with your camera hanging around your neck with your children, people will ask you, and you know, you can say, oh yes, I am a photographer, and you can give them one of your cards. I'll even, if I'm out on my own, or even if I'm out with my children and I see a family, and I may even say, you know, if, hey, you know, you've got a beautiful child, if you ever think about having family photography done, I hope you'll think of me, and I give them a card. But I'm content to kind of let my business grow on a, I don't know, gradual basis as word of mouth and what have you. I'm busy doing my other work that I do. I do computer work as well. So I'm happy to kind of let it build slowly. And I guess the other thing I wanted, I sent a couple of images to you, Martin, just talking about making clients feel comfortable. So far, I've had very good luck with this, and most of my clients have been fairly comfortable in front of the camera. I had one boy who was not keen on it, and he was a bit tricky. But I find, you know, I just keep talking to them, you know, just engage them in conversation, and I just constantly have the camera up, snap, 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 just taking pictures. Let them hopefully get so used to you having the camera up to your eye and clicking the shutter that they forget and just get busy interacting. So the first picture that Martin might have up is my friend Jeff and his wife Krista at a couple shoot I did last weekend. And, you know, they were just happy and interacting with each other. And when I, you know, kept snapping the pictures. The next one was a shot, I call it an outtake shot, because really what it was the, you see a lot of pictures, I guess engagement shots really where people do this, where they have the couple's hands together extended and focusing on the hands, I guess, to show off the engagement ring. And that's what I was doing with this series. And at some point I threw the focus onto them and it was, you know, just caught this moment of them kind of laughing and having fun and enjoying each other. And I think it's a great shot. And then I also sent you a picture of a father and a daughter. And again, I just thought this is a great moment with the father kind of snuggling with the daughter and you know, just really looking at her and loving her and the daughter kind of laughing. I mean, they knew I was taking the picture. I was, you know, right there in their face with a macro lens. So, but I still think it looks very natural and it really shows the connection between the two of them. And that's really what I kind of strive to accomplish when I'm out doing my family shoots, is just the natural interaction of the family, because this is how they will remember themselves. You know, this is the way they really are. And that's really what I hope to accomplish with my photography.
I'm going through, Holly, looking at the images, and I can totally see that connection between you and your subjects. I think that, you know, you've really captured the moment. You know, the first couple of you know, of the couple, really, really nice. You know, I love the toning and everything as well. Mm-hmm. But you've caught them just right there, and it works really well. And the last one that you mentioned of the father with his daughter, you know, the look on both of their faces is just amazing. It's, you know, you can feel the sort of the family connection there and everything, and the connection with you, but that's not really, it's not really obvious, you know. It's just right. A father and daughter having fun, and like you say, a snuggle. It's just great. So I can't wait for the listeners to take a look at these as well.
Yes, well, that's what I do, and often I'll get with couples. I did the family shoot that I spoke about, the first family shoot that I did. I was getting trying to get the mom and dad to interact together, and I said, you know, Chris, give her a kiss, and you know, Chris, they get a bit embarrassed, but then you get them laughing, you know, you get them coming in, and as they're coming apart, I got a great shot of them, you know, coming apart, and just having, you know, smiling and laughing because, you know, they felt a little bit awkward and embarrassed, but then you get this warm moment between the two of them, and you know, I think it really comes across. I mean, I love what I do. When I go to the family shoots, you know, I kind of lose track of time because I really do enjoy it, and I think I'm just as excited to get home and see how the images turned out as the client is to see how their photo shoot turned out. I mean, of course, I always want to make sure that I got the technical details. I got the focus on the eyes and all of those important things. But catching the moment is really my primary goal. And sometimes an image might not be technically perfect, but if it catches the moment, that's, I think, more important than being technically spot on.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great work. So, Landon, did you have anything to add?
Oh, I could sit here all night and talk about Holly's work. You know, I've had the fortune of being able to talk to her for a while now about imagery and business and photos and you know, critiquing and commenting and all kinds of stuff. So you know, I thought Holly would be a great person to bring onto this round table. I can't say enough about her style and her work. I see it, the connection myself in her work with her clients, so it's great to see. And I do have a couple things to add. And I think women photographers have a benefit to some degree, because I've shot kids, babies, mothers, families, myself. And I don't know if it's just me, but there, you know, most of the people that I shoot, I end up knowing. because I usually don't like shooting people I don't get to know, at least at a cursory meeting. But there is a benefit to, I think, a connection with a woman photographer to some degree, because they just, it seems like some subjects are more comfortable with it, and it is something that I have to worry about on occasion of how that's approached. So I was going to say sometimes that's where it's helpful to have an assistant like your wife or a female assistant that can be that approach. So I think there is a benefit there.
Definitely. I on that, on a similar note, when Holly said earlier, you know, you were talking about this very thing. And I, although I'm not a big portrait photographer, I mean, I do shoot every so often, but I don't know, again, if it's because I'm a guy or if it's because I don't have kids myself. But I'm generally a lot less comfortable around kids. And although I like kids, and I've watching my nephews grow up and my niece and as well, these sort of things, it does, obviously, it helps, but I think that it definitely does help, as you said, you know, having had children yourself. You know, I mean, I was a kid once, but I'm just not very good around.
It was a while ago, eh?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it also helps that people aren't threatened by a woman taking pictures. I mean, I almost always have my camera in the schoolyard, and, you know, people don't get upset when I'm taking the pictures. In fact, my son and I were at the park in the summer, and there was a beautiful little girl there, blonde hair, blue eyed. She was just beautiful, and I couldn't resist asking the mother if I could take some pictures because she was adorable. And I wish they were actually visiting from LA. They were visiting her mother, but the mother and the daughter lived in LA, and I gave her my card and said, please email me, I'll send you images. And unfortunately, I never heard from her. But I mean, I don't know how many women would be comfortable if a man were to say the same thing. And, you know, I mean, it's unfortunate, but it's understandable in the world today. That,
yeah, there's just so many whack-ups out there. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So being normal, it's frustrating. But from the other perspective, I can definitely see, you know, some guy comes up asking to take photos of your kids. And it's going to be worrisome. So, you know, I think that, you know, definitely that's something that's, it's unfortunate, but it's, you know, there's too many wackos in the world for that to be not an issue.
Right.
And it is something I have to deal with, you know, when I'm on location, you know, doing a shoot, or I want to do a shoot of something. But the thing that I only really have total control over is my image. I try to be as professional as possible, you know, be upfront with people exactly what I want, and not try to have any sly maneuvers. And most of the time, you know, at least with networking that I've done, people end up knowing me anyway, or they understand the situation. So I rarely go up to a stranger and say, hey, can I shoot your kid? Because it just, it's uncomfortable, you know, in it. So usually if I want to do that, I have to find another avenue to do it. I can't just go direct. So it's kind of tricky.
Definitely for a man, it would be. I think it's a great,
then they say, well, what's your motive?
Yes, well, exactly. What are you going to do with the pictures? What, you know, of course. And I think it helps too, of course, that I can hand a business card and they know that I do this, well, not strictly for a living now, for part of my living. Having a card that you can pull out and hand to somebody, it helps as well. So
I'm totally on board with that. I just I don't know if you heard a phone start ringing, and I had to just go on to mute for a moment as well, and just tell it or ask a friend to call back in an hour. So sorry about that. So okay. Phil, did you have anything that you wanted to add on this?
Yeah, I guess the only thing, I totally agree with both Holly and Landon saying that being a man and work, you know, taking pictures of kids, I always feel slightly uncomfortable, you know, taking pictures of other people's kids. And I guess most of the time when I go out and have that opportunity, it is with people that I know. My son is in Boy Scouts, he's in soccer, you know, everything at school. So the people that I'm taking pictures of know me. And, you know, like Holly's saying, you carry your camera with you everywhere. So people kind of get the sense that that's what's going on. But yeah, I'm really uncomfortable trying to get out there and, you know, say, can I take a picture of your kid? And, you know, mm-hmm. do you want to, you know, have family portraits taken? And, but, I guess if you want to get into the business, you kind of got to jump out there and advertise yourself. So, that hearing Holly say that, it's a good motivation for me to get out there and try to maybe be a little more forceful with, you know, getting into it.
Well, I think the thing, Phil, to do is if you're thinking of doing it, is to get a website up. One of the things you've got to do is check out your competition and see what people are charging. A lot of people start up and they charge their prices are way too low. And that doesn't help the industry at all, because it really gives a false expectation to the client about, you know, what it costs. I mean, the amount of time that it costs to do the shoot and to do the post-processing and for the equipment, it has to be covered. But it really depends on your market, what your market will bear. But having a website with your prices up is a great way to just kind of direct people and say, you know, people say, oh, you know, I'm thinking about doing a shoot. What are your packages? And I'll just say, oh, here's my card and take a look. It's all on my website. And then they can get back to me. I actually don't really pursue people. I let people come back to me. And, you know, because I don't want to push it. I mean, they might say, oh, well, that's way too much, or that's beyond what we're thinking about spending, or, you know, they may have an expectation in their mind of how much something like that costs, and it may be inaccurate. So that just saves awkward conversations.
Right.
To have that information up.
Yeah, I did have one other question specifically mm-hmm. for you, Holly, was you have a very unique style, and I love your style, but I could see where, you know, your style may not suit other people. Have you ever mm-hmm. had people wanting to structure their shoots and say, here's the way I want it to come out, and how do you handle that?
No, I haven't had it as yet. No, I haven't done that many shoots. I have actually a shoot tomorrow from somebody that I have had one word of mouth shoot, which was the father and daughter that I sent the image that I sent to Martin. And that was actually the father is a brother of a woman who I did a family shoot for. So that was my first word of mouth. And tomorrow I have a shoot with a woman that I've never met. Well, actually it's her boyfriend and her and his three children. She's buying him a session or for his birthday. But she specifically said that she loved my style, and she told me that she wanted to check with a family friend about who was a photographer, but she would get back to me, but she really believed that I was the right person because of my style. So I think that people will look at my photography and realize that this is what they're getting, this is what they're paying for, is this style and this style of photography. It's candid, it's almost photojournalism, it's catching the moment, it's not a studio pose thing. Now, not to say that I don't try and get kind of group shots, and you know, it is a bit posed, some shots, but for a lot of it, I'm just kind of standing there, wandering around, catching the moment. And that's my style, and I think that if I was talking to a client or I got the feeling that they were looking for something beyond that, I might say, you know, I don't know that we're a good fit. And I don't think I would try and do a shoot where I had an idea in my mind that the client had an expectation of me that wasn't my style.
Good point.
Okay, that's great, though. And there's a lot of great advice in there as well, as just being incredibly interesting. So does anybody have anything else to add or ask? Okay, if not...
Not without taking another hour.
Yeah, I was... you know, the thing about pricing, I mean, that's true for photography on the whole at the moment, and I think we could do a whole podcast on that anyway, so I'm not even going to get started.
I think you have to be true to yourself, too, and I think you have to be... I think you have to set in your mind that you're worth,
right.
You know, what you're worth, and you don't alter from that. I mean, because... it'll get around, you know what I mean? If you just have to have it firmly in your mind and go forward.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's It sounds like someone just headbutted the microphone. So let's move on. So Phil, what are you going to talk to us about?
I was going to talk about how to use Lightroom to help speed up your workflow. And I guess more than just your normal, you know, you go out and shoot for afternoon, come home, have, you know, 50, 100, 200 images, and trying to get through those fast and get them published somewhere. But more along the lines of doing like a studio shoot. I've had a couple occasions lately where I've done some work for people. I've done some product shots in my house, kind of in a studio setup. And then last weekend, I actually got volunteered to do a photo booth at my son's school for a fundraising thing that they were doing. And we had, you know, there's 250 kids in the school. We have I don't know how many shots we were going to do. And we needed to be able to get through all those images and be able to actually print them and give them to people on the spot. And to be able to do that quickly on your normal workflow of taking a shot, pull out your, you know, flash card, put it into the camera or computer, import it, it takes a lot of time. So a while back, I found a method to try to speed that up, and it basically involves attaching your camera to your computer. Most computers do this via a USB cable. I know some still use FireWire, and then you can also get some wireless devices to do that. But the basic premise is you take a shot, you have the software that comes with your camera import the shot from your camera directly into the computer and puts it into a folder. And then you set Lightroom up to watch that folder and import the photo directly into Lightroom. That process alone takes a ton of time out of your workflow. The big benefit you get is you actually get to see the image full screen on your computer. I shoot with a Rebel XT, and I've got a little 1.8-inch LCD on the back, and trying to see a shot at that small of a screen is really tough to do. Putting it on a, you know, 15-inch widescreen laptop is a big help. So basically the premise is use whatever software comes with your camera. I shoot Canon, so we use Digital Photo Professional. You set that up to dump files into a folder. I was actually talking with Landon the other day, and he shoots Nikon, and he said Nikon software does basically the same thing. Then you set Lightroom up to watch that folder. And the real benefit comes from actually understanding all the functions within Lightroom and trying to automate those. To date, there's no scripting like you could do in Photoshop, but there's some what Lightroom calls presets. You go through and you make your adjustments and you set everything up ahead of time, and you can apply those to the images as you import the image into the computer. So what I was doing is I'd take a test shot, the photo booth situation I had the other week. I had my kids, you know, sit in the scene, took a few shots, got the composition right, the lighting, all that stuff adjusted, and then pulled the file into Lightroom and made all of my, you know, contrast adjustments and sharpening and saturation until the image looked, you know, pretty good. Now you have to kind of get an average base because everybody's, you know, wearing something different, or depending on what your situation is, stuff's going to vary. So you kind of have to take an average. But you create that, take that test image and save all the settings as a preset. And then when you set Lightroom up to watch that folder, you apply that preset to the image when it comes in. And then once you get it into Lightroom, I normally just click on that folder that it's imported into, and I set the filter flags to only show unflagged images and picked images. By doing this, when you pull the file in, and if it's a complete reject, you know, say your flash didn't fire or somebody blinked in the picture, you can hit the X key on your keyboard to mark it as a reject, and the image won't delete, but it'll be hidden from view and you won't have to manage it. And then if you do like it, you can flag it as a pick and it'll stay in your display.
from there, I quickly look at it, and if there is some, you know, minor exposure adjustments, I'll normally use the quick develop panel in the library module to boost up exposure or contrast. And then from that point, you can do whatever you need to. In the case of when I did the photo booth, we had to print them. So I immediately took that image, went to the print module. I already had a preset set up for my printer, paper, paper size, the print quality, and just used that template and printed the number of copies that I was needing to print out. So in the course of one evening that we did this, we had 55 people come up and wanted images taken. We printed off almost 80, and we did this all in an hour and a half. Right. So it was actually pretty quick. And everybody was really, really happy with the results. And they're not, you know, fine art prints, or because, you know, we didn't get to tweak each individual one, but it was really good. So being able to be comfortable with your workflow and using those presets with your camera attached to the computer, you can blaze through some images pretty quick in those situations.
That's really cool. You know, it just shows that, I don't know if you really looked into this. I guess it's a question. Did you look into this before you had the problem to solve, or was it the problem that got you to sort of to take a look into how to do this?
Basically, the first time I had it was I was doing some product shots for a coworker of mine that's starting a business, and you know, I'm sitting there in a kind of a studio environment in my house and doing the same repetitive shots over and over again, but just replacing out the product. So the lighting didn't change, the you know, camera was on a tripod, and I kept having to pull the flash card out and put it into the computer, import it to see if, you know, everything was adjusted correctly. So I did do a little bit of research online and found somebody that had done something very similar to this, but it wasn't quite perfect. And I've gone through and adjusted it a little bit. I did find that one of the biggest issues is you got to make sure you have the most updated software from your camera. So Canon Digital Photo Professional, the one I had was a couple versions old, and it actually didn't work on my Windows Vista machine. So getting the software update to make sure everybody's, you know, got that before you try starting it.
I find it really fascinating. I know that, I mean, I've done tethered shooting myself before with the Canon software. You know, having a problem to solve usually is the thing that makes us to really sort of connect these things together. So although I was aware of the various pieces of technology, I used presets like religiously. But, you know, then listening to this and how you've connected it all together, I think that's great. You know, it really shows how the necessity can get you thinking.
Yep.
Was there anything else that you wanted to add?
Yes, one more thing. I've shot tethered myself, and I did do a test, Phil, after you and I talked offline about Nikon Capture Control does the very same thing. You connect your camera via USB, you shoot tethered, and drop it into Lightroom and have the Lightroom look for that directory, and it works great. I've shot tethered many times, but usually just direct to the computer. I haven't bothered to go through the Lightroom step, but it is nice. So the only question I had is shooting with long shoots and having enough battery power to shoot tethered, because for me, I noticed that it does kind of suck the batteries down quicker than normal. Have you noticed that, Phil?
Yeah, actually, I was wondering about that when I started going into this last weekend, and I think I had the camera on for just over 2 hours between setup and, you know, getting everybody through. I have an external battery grip for my camera, and I have two batteries in it. And by the time I got done, the battery meter on the back of the camera still said it was fully charged. So I don't think I'm getting, or at least I know I'm not getting any power back through the USB cable to power the camera. But the only thing that by leaving it on the entire time that it looked like it was powering was the back LCD screen with your settings. It wasn't draining anything because the sensor wasn't on. The LCD on mine doesn't show the settings on your big LCD. So that may drain it. But I haven't had any issues, so having that battery grip was a big help. But I guess if you do have issues, you would probably need to get an AC power adapter for your camera.
Yeah, I haven't had the issue either. I just noticed that, you know, it just seemed to drain the batteries quicker than normal. But I was shooting a long time too. I was connected for 6 hours. So
yeah, I haven't gone that far yet.
I did have a vertical grip and two batteries loaded, and they were fully charged, but I noticed that I did have to take one of the ones out and charge it, you know, halfway through the session, so.
Good point. Okay, so if nobody has anything else, thanks for that, Phil. That was a great topic as well. I'm learning so much from you guys today. So I guess the, you know, last thing is for me to just talk about my topic. I was really, you know, like I said, I was thinking about not letting the excitement of the location or the subject sort of get in the way of your editing or sway your judgment during editing. And, you know, I think that this is becoming more of an issue because, you know, it's now possible to sort of view the images on the LCD as you shoot them, and they look great on there. And then, you know, it, of course, it's good to be able to see that, to get the feedback in the field. So there's definitely more pluses to digital than there are, you know, demerits, in my opinion. But, you know, it also sort of gets our hopes up a little bit more as well. And then, you know, what we sort of do is we go off to these great places and we'll see sort of a beautiful vista, or we'll be peering through the lens at something that like maybe a macro shot of a flower or something, and it all really, you know, sort of gets us all hyped up and we get excited about the end result, and that in itself's good. You know, being enthusiastic about your work is necessary, and you know, something that we shouldn't do, you know, we shouldn't change. But then what happens is, you know, that you end up sort of, I guess the other thing as well is like new kit. You know, you can get excited about, you get a new lens or something. I mean, like me, I got the 85mm f1.2 a few weeks ago, and I sort of lived in that lens for a few weeks. And it's like, you know, I mean, it's a great lens, but it's really important to not allow the excitement for the lens to really get through. And I remember that I took a few practice shots around the town. And I did upload a couple that I was happy with, but it was really difficult for me to sort of not go and just upload a load more, because I was just really just excited about the results. So this is really what I wanted to go into a little bit more. You know, when you get back from a shoot, you know, what I generally tend to do is I try to, if the technology at the moment and the speed of the computers and things is allowing us to post-process really quickly. And if I've got the energy after, you know, say I've driven for like 4 hours, I often don't do it till the next day anyway. But if I've shot some images and I get home and I've got the energy, then I will go through and I'll start to mark the ones that I want to delete, and then the ones that I want to take further in my post-processing, I'll start to sort of flag those as well. But there are, at this time when I'm doing that, there are some images that are kind of borderline, and as you start to get used to how this happens, you know, the excitement starting to affect how you edit, and I think that you know, it's easier to stop doing this. But even when you are used to it, there are always some images that I'm thinking, that's good, it sort of shows the place, you know, how I want it to. But it's really sort of mediocre, and it's not the sort of thing that you want to be including in your images, especially in a portfolio. I mean, for me, with my online gallery, a lot of it is what I think is, from my own standards, is great work. But then a lot of it is sort of, it is mediocre, but it's there for different reasons. But definitely, if you're working if you're putting together a portfolio, or you're putting together a batch of images to give to a client, you don't want to be including mediocre images. So once I get to the end of my first day or whatever, you know, the first few passes, and I've got a list of shots, usually there are images in there that are still mediocre, and I'll if I've got the courage, then I'll remove them at that point. If not, what I do is I generally tend to leave them in there for another day, and just sleep on it. And I think that, you know, that even just one night's sleep can sort of really the excitement dies down. You're not as sort of fired up about the whole thing. And you can look at the whole batch of images much more subjectively. And so what I try to do is, unless I've just got a whole batch of killers that I know are fine and I can get them uploaded straight away, I generally tend to sleep on it and then, you know, allow myself to calm down a little bit. And really that's the sort of the main sort of crux of what I was trying to say. And I was wondering if you guys also do anything similar.
Definitely.
I think it's funny because Landon, you and I had a discussion about this just recently, didn't we? Via email.
Yes. Among other things, but yes, definitely this one. Yeah, so, I was going to add just real quickly that with my client workflow, it's all done in Lightroom. I hardly ever touch Photoshop anymore. So I really rely on Lightroom to speed up my workflow for client shoots. And I charge more and spend less time in the computer and shoot more. So I think that's good for me. But the one thing I do is when I take the photos, I look at them in the camera and I love them. When I dump them into Lightroom, the first 24 hours I hate them, because then I start picking them apart and I thought, well, gosh, I could have done this. Oh, if I'd done this. Oh, the background is this. Oh, you know. So then I leave it. I put them in there. I back them up. I make sure that there's two or three copies of any client work that I do, and then I leave them. I leave them sit for a minimum of 24 hours, usually 48. I pride myself in, you know, getting the client their files quickly, but I need time to let them sit there, because when I come back to them within 24, 48 hours later and they're fresh again and I look at them subjectively and I just process them out for what they are, I know that the client's going to like it. I don't pick my work apart at that point, and I can process it quickly. I can sit down within 15 to 30 minutes. I can process out a client job, and I don't fret about it anymore. But that first day of coming in from the shoot and looking at them, it's the worst time for me to pick the shots that are going to be the keepers.
I see.
Landon, how many shots would there be that you would end up in the final batch from a shoot?
Oh, gosh, it really depends on the client. But, you know, it might be 20, might be 50. It depends on totally depends on the client, how many hours they've booked and how much time I've spent, how many setup shots I get to do and whatnot. But it's completely variable. But I used to spend hours fretting about the favorites and having them choose them. And for my workflow, I give them the best stuff. So I just output it to them, and I always try to give them more than they expect. So,
right, I find it difficult because I think the photography that I do is so subjective. People have. If it's a photograph of yourself, you have your own idea in your mind about what slight angle isn't you don't like, or what feature you don't quite like, or if it's a photo of your child, there might be a certain look that they have on your face that I wouldn't necessarily recognize as being, you know, a unique look to them, but may speak to the mother or the father. So I tend to have huge client galleries and give them, you know, lots of choice. But sometimes that pays off. I had a client, I have two DVD options, and I had a client go with the higher price DVD option because, you know, they couldn't narrow it down to their top 15 pictures because they like they took all of them. So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I basically just had to finally raise my rates and give them all the good stuff because I couldn't pick. They couldn't pick, and they didn't pick. So it just became a frustration point.
And Landon, you know, as you know, once you've got the gallery up, you've kind of done the processing for the most part. There might be a little bit here and there, maybe a little touching up somewhere, but for the most part, it's done. So there really isn't that much work. I mean, you have got to process it and put it onto the DVD, depending on how you package that, but or how you do your prints, but the work is for the processing work is basically done at that point.
Right. Yep.
Cool. Did you have anything to add on that, Phil?
Other than to say that it must be nice not to have kids where you can actually get in there and download your images right away. Because I don't seem to have this problem because I never get to look at my stuff for, you know, a day or two anyway, but... No, but it is a good point. I guess the question I had for Holly was, you know, you brought up something of you load up the gallery for everybody, but you've already gone through a filtering cycle of your own to pull mm-hmm. in good and bad images, right?
Oh, yes, definitely. Okay. Oh, of course, so, because there are images that are out of focus or eyes are closed or whatever.
So you know. There you're looking more for the technical piece, and then you put up the ones that are technically acceptable.
Acceptable or catch a moment.
Right.
Yeah. But sometimes, you know, I might have a series of shots that were shot, like maybe five or six that were shot very in a very close space of time. But, you know, it's so subjective, like the shot of the couple that where I had the outtake picture. That was the only outtake that I had that I can recall now. I have quite a few of them where the focus is on the hands extended, and you can see them in the background where they're, you know, they're kissing or they're smiling or they're doing different things. And I put up, I don't know, five or six of them because they were different. And especially if women, I think women can be a little bit more self-conscious of their image. And you don't necessarily know, you might think that the woman looks great, but she may not like that image for some reason. So I tend to want to give them the choice and not make it my choice about what I think is the best of the bunch. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
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 So. Cool. Okay. So, you know, this has been great. We've gone over, I think we're well over an hour. Great topics though. So I think we should probably just sort of start to wrap it up now.
Okay.
So let's, before we do finish up, I guess we could go along, and if anybody has any tips, anything that you want to plug in addition to your own websites and things. So, Landon, did you have anything?
Yeah, I would. After looking at what happened tonight, I'd really like to bookend Holly's statements and cover a few little bullet points to help people in their thought processes of doing photography as a business. Mm. And I wanted to cover networking is important. Sometimes donations are great because it keeps you out there in the face of the public. Using coworkers is great. Mm. And trade outs can be great too. You can trade out services with maybe a local cafe and get some of your artwork hung in their cafe, things like that. Mm. The big one I wanted to cover was stay in control, even when you feel you're not capable of doing it. Because if you're not in control of the shoot, the person that will be is probably not the one you want. Mm. And then the other thing I was going to say is use the client's names. It really works well, so get used to learning their names and using their names on a shoot. And then if you can capture expressions and moments, you're going to be, you know, 70% there. Then the rest of the technical stuff will come. And then use an assistant when you can, because it really does help with things like wardrobe, you know, behind-the-scenes stuff that you are not able to, you know, keep track of. And then, like I said before, you know, packaging and marketing, and then leave the client with more than what they expect.
Great. Great tips. Okay. So, Holly, did you have anything that you wanted to plug?
Yes. Well, one thing I wanted to suggest is Flickr is great. I'm on a couple of sites, or I should say groups on Flickr, for doing this kind of business. And it's a great resource and support. And, you know, people that can answer your questions, you can throw up an issue there, and people will reply, and it's a wonderful resource. And if you find photographers on Flickr or anywhere that you work you enjoy and inspires you, if they have a blog, bookmark it and visit it regularly. Is another great way to kind of keep your work fresh as well, to see what other people are doing and to get inspiration from other people's work.
Great, great points. Yeah. Okay, Phil, anything?
Last week when I was getting ready to do my shoot at my son's school, I realized it'd be a great time to hand out business cards, and I didn't have any. And my brother actually pointed me to a great site that integrates with Flickr. It's called Moo.com, M-O-O, and you can actually use Flickr to apply your images to all kinds of different printed media. I selected their little, what they call mini Moo cards. They're very small business card type things. You put your image on the front, put your contact information on the back, and they look great. I get a box of 100. You can select up to 100 different images you want to put on there. I've been showing them to people, and they've been you know, flipping through them and picking out which one they like. It's kind of a fun way to interact with people. So I had a really good experience with them. They're really fast. They print from London. They couldn't find me in Idaho. They shipped through Germany. So they must not know where Idaho is in the States. So.
Okay.
Just to add to that, Martin, that is what I use for my business card is the mini Moo cards, and I actually do them in Photoshop. They have a template, and I can do the image and my logo as well if the image doesn't work, being cropped to the little image for the mini Moo card. And it's a great, clients love them because I have my work on there, and they can pick what they like, and they've got some examples of your work on them with your contact information.
Yeah, that's great.
I've been using them for a year, and I've never found a client that didn't find it intriguing, and it's a great conversation piece too.
I remember seeing you in the forum. Was it with Brian? You were talking about some free ones that you got there to begin with.
Yeah, I signed up for the free ones that they got, and then I liked them so much, I ordered them when they had the promo to get free shipping. So.
That's what they want when they start those marketing things, I guess.
Yeah. It's a great way to market yourself.
Yeah. So I've briefly then wanted to mention a general thing that I'm really getting stung with at the moment, and that is there are a lot of hardware vendors out there at the moment that are slapping Vista-compatible stickers on their hardware. And I got last week in sort of, waiting for my 1DS Mark III that's on order, I've bought a couple of very fast Lexar compact flash cards, which are great. Everything seems to work fine. And I also bought a FireWire 800, which is the really fast card reader from Lexar as well. And I didn't have the 9-pin FireWire connectors on my computer, so I bought for $70, I had to buy a card to expand that. And then having spent like 6 hours online in various forums and, both of these things, of course, said that they support Vista. But I found out last night from Lexar's support guys that it only supports 32-bit Vista. I don't know if that's really true, because I also find out after that my card also only supports 32-bit Vista. So I think that you need to, if you are in the market, you know, you're looking around for stuff for your Vista machines. If you use 64-bit, then be very careful to read the small print, because you could get bitten. And I'm probably going to end up now having to go back to 32-bit, because that's the only way I can get my new hardware to work. So just a tip really there for checking the small print with regards to Vista support. And that was really it. So I guess before we finish, we can sort of take a moment to all plug each other's sites. Landon, do you have anything that you want to plug?
Well, certainly. I'll just go ahead and give people a plug to where they can find me on the internet. That's always helpful. So if you want to interact with me, you know, the best way to do it would probably be on Flickr. So if you go to flickr.com/photos/bksecretphoto, you'll find me. And you can also find me on my domain at www.bksecret.com.
Great. So let's see. So Holly, I guess you've got your own website as well, obviously.
I do. It's hollysissonphotography.com, and there's a link on there to my blog, which tends to be more up to date with the latest pictures on it than sometimes my gallery is.
Okay, that's great. And Phil, anything?
I'm a big Flickr user like Landon, so you can find me at flickr.com/photos/philpeck. I post fairly regularly, so find my stuff there.
Okay, great. And the only thing that I wanted to plug, obviously everyone knows the websites and that, but I did want to quickly mention again the workshop that we'll be doing in Hokkaido here in Japan next January. And if you're interested, go over to www.mbpworkshops.com and take a look at that. So I really wanted to just, before we do all sort of sign off, I wanted to quickly thank Landon publicly for all of the great work you do around the Martin Bailey photography sites and the MBP members gallery. You help out not only with moderation and stuff like that, but you know, you're forever contributing with articles and things as a member in addition to moderator. So I wanted to just publicly thank you for all of that, because you know I really, really do appreciate all of your help.
Well, I'm really happy to contribute, and this keeps me from having to develop my own site, which I know I wouldn't maintain as well. So,
and also, you know, so then really just thanks to Holly and Phil as well, and again to Landon for joining me today. And it's been great talking to you, and I can't wait to get this out and see what the listeners think, because I know they're going to love it.
Great.
Yep. It was great.
Thank you.
So, yeah, I guess that's it then. We'll see you all again online, and maybe again in a future roundtable if we get a chance to do this again. So thanks very much, everybody.
Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Great, thank you.
I was like telling everyone, oh yeah, just use the word collect thing, and they were like, where are you from? Anyway,
the dog's there.
Okay, so was that the Dalmatian, Landon?
Oh, you heard the ear flapping.
Yeah.
Yes, heard the collar jingling. I know that sound. Yeah. I used to have a dog many years ago.
Oh yeah, she's been very quiet, but she just now decided to get up.
Great.
Otherwise, we have to re-record the whole thing.
You know, there's one thing. That was the other thing that I wanted to mention, that I'm a little bit worried because I was messing around with the PC yesterday, as you have to do before an important call, and it actually crashed a couple of times over the last 24 hours. And if it does that in the next hour, then there'll be a greasy, wet spot on the ground outside my apartment. And that's generally going to be me splattered there, because I'll jump out of the window. So I can't get Landon back in, but we'll...
Maybe his computer crashed.
Yeah, I think it's probably...
You guys are all on PCs, aren't you?
Are you on a Mac?
Yes, I am.
Oh, got to rub that in, huh?
Oh, yes.
I'm messing this up already. From Washington State. Do we have to say state? It's got that in your... So, from Washington...
Well, if you say Washington, everybody on the Eastern Seaboard will think it's Washington, D.C. So
okay,
I usually tell people it's Washington, the state.
Okay, so from Washington State. We have.
Yeah, and you probably don't want to be mixed up with that either.
No.
So then when I've done that, I'll just... leave a, you know, when we've sort of gone in, I'll make a few more comments about what we're going to talk about, which I assume is still long exposures, ND, and painting with time for you, Landon.
I completely changed it. No, I'm just kidding.
I know you well enough to start laughing there, not crying. Tell you what.
I think the moderator picks, right?
Well, the thing is, I'm generally indecisive, and that could be frustrating. What it means is that I'm there, saying, okay, who wants to go next? Okay, who's next? Who's next? Who's next? So then we all end up sounding like a bunch of indecisive idiots when it's really just me. You know, we sort of just... jumped all over the place after Phil's topic, but does anybody else have anything to add? Question?
Did Phil's finish?
Were you gone that long?
PhotocastNetwork.com, your photography resource in the podosphere. PhotocastNetwork.com.